When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to five pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome back to Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel ever-expanding cinematic multiverse. I'm your host, Kyle Sconewell, joined by my co-host and longtime friend, Robbie Earl. I am so excited to be here for so many reasons, but it is good to be in Austin, Texas at the Earl Sanctum Sanctorum.
Wow.
Wow.
First time recording space here that you've created for us. Talk about curation.
It was a group effort. You created the house.
That's fair. Samwise is here. Is Samwise on camera?
We got a fireplace. Samwise's butt, maybe, or head.
Yeah,
here.
That feels right. Wow.
Wow. Deadpool and Wolverine.
Okay, man.
Deadpool and Wolverine just happened to us.
Yeah.
In a theater in Austin.
So just for context here, it's been over a year, almost a year and a half since we have had an episode like this.
We should start there too. Just the overall feeling of you picking me up at the airport.
Yeah.
The vibe in the car on the way over, not just from us, but the entire Marvel community, the superhero community. I think if the mission was let's pause for a little bit from Marvel's perspective so that there's a little more hype, I think mission accomplished. It feels like the whole world is buzzing about this film right now.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I can say that's been the case. I mean, we've loved a lot of stuff. I'm saying for the last couple of years, maybe since No Way Home, probably.
Yeah, I think that's right. And the difference there, I think, is that No Way Home, as we've said a lot on the podcast recently, dropped smack dab in the middle of all these like backed up Phase 4 releases. So it was like this kind of onslaught, which was really like, I don't want to like paint that like retroactively as a negative, because I think at the time a lot of that stuff was really fun. It's just, it's a very different thing. Like,
sure,
to get a movie that's as significant as No Way Home in a movie that has four, or in a year that has four Marvel movies, versus a movie like Deadpool and Wolverine in a year that has none besides that, and won't have another until, what's the next movie on the slate?
I think
Captain America.
So, in February. But I will just say that we are recording this pre-Comic-Con. Kevin has hinted that some of the release schedule has been tweaked a little bit based on this film. And I don't know, based on some other factors. So as of now, it's Brave New World. We have an episode out talking about that, kind of just based off the trailer and things like that. But I think that's the next one. But yeah, it's still going to be another break. As long as from the Marvels till now.
So, okay, I'm so glad that you brought up Kevin, because I think that something I want to talk about before we even dive into the movie itself, which there's so much to talk about there. But
so much.
You and I, on the way, were talking about these Feige quotes that have been making the rounds for a couple days now. And I think it's the two in tandem that really got everyone's imaginations working on overdrive.
Sure. Yeah.
First, he said that if you're ranking Marvel movies in terms of their impact on the MCU.
Yep. Endgame's a 10.
Mm-hmm.
Infinity War's a 9. And this is an 8.
Which is a bold claim. It's a bold thing to say, because I mean, once you even start digging into that, you know, and maybe this was off the cuff, but it's like, where does Civil War fall into that? Where does Ragnarok fall into that? Like these movies that not even qualitatively, like in terms of just are they good movies, but just like moments that have a really big impact on the trajectory of the linear MCU. So that was one piece. Then the other quote that came out paired with that was some version of everything after Deadpool and Wolverine is going to be about bringing the mutants into the MCU. Now, again, I think that that is like part hyperbole and part like looking way big picture. And we thought that going into it. Like, I don't think we were like, oh man, now Fantastic Four is a movie about the X-Men. But that is a crazy...
Johnny like, Storm.
yeah, true. Those two things together, like, set the bar really high in a way that has nothing to do with the quality of the movie, right? Like,
saying that, you mean?
Yes. Like, it's like, that is not... Because like I'm saying before, like when you bring up Civil War, we talk about Civil War as a movie that is great and a, you know, in so many ways epitomizes like the peak era of the MCU. But also, that is a movie that might as well have been an Avengers movie in sure. the way that it moves the ball forward. And like there's like, you cannot watch, you can't go from Age of Ultron to Infinity War and not be very confused.
For sure.
And... So I think like to set the bar that this is like not even that, but on par with or right below Infinity War and Endgame as like a connective tissue moment for the MCU is really interesting because that is what people have been craving since what Endgame? Like, because we haven't had like think we have not had a single entry that feels comparable to a Civil War or even really like a Winter Soldier in terms of like we were here and now we're here, right? So it's like,
okay, so is this where you want to start? Because I feel like this is going to be, this whole episode for me is going to be two separate conversations. If you just want to talk qualitatively about the film, I could go on forever about how hard I was laughing. I mean, in general, how excellent we thought it was the whole time. Is that
right.
fair to say?
Yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
For the most part, it was a wild ride that we were stoked to be on. I mean, speaking of the hype, I legitimately just got chills hearing the intro credit roll and then Deadpool makes a reference to that. Like, wow, that gets you going, right? It does. It still gets me going. Yeah. So if I ever was questioning if that has been lost, you just need to play 2 seconds of the credit roll and I'm like, so in.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think I laughed... Definitely the funniest Deadpool movie to me.
Uh-huh.
One of the funniest comic movies ever made, in my opinion. I mean, I was laughing really hard for a good majority of the movie. I feel like we talked about in our Deadpool 1 and 2 episodes about how it's a volume shooter. This felt a little less just kind of spraying. It felt more hits, for sure, than misses here.
Yeah.
So just really funny. Again, we're going to get into that in a second, I guess.
Yeah.
Like all of that stuff, the action, everything, the music I thought was pretty cool. The use of the pop songs.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Again. Soundtrack was great.
Shout out music supervisor. I think his name is Dave Jordan. Uh-huh. Same guy. Just
dude, always.
Killing
yeah.
It. So that's one part of this whole episode. The other part is, does it fit that statement from Kevin?
Yeah.
And that's the thing I was wondering about in the car. I'm not even, again, this is an initial reaction.
Yeah.
So for me, that's what I was wrestling with post my crazy enjoyment of the film.
Yeah.
So to me, it was a top tier Marvel movie that I enjoyed the whole way through. And then in the car, I said to you, okay, but at the end, for example, like they don't even come into the sacred timeline and they're really only there for a couple funny sequences. And so when Kevin says it's an 8 on the importance scale, I can see how it's an 8 on the, how it affects movies in the cinematic universe.
Yeah.
But from a plot standpoint, I don't know that I would go there. I don't know that I left. Like, we didn't get a ton of incursion talk. We didn't get any. We didn't get any talk about what it means for the Sacred timeline now that the Fox timeline still exists. I think you and I both thought the Fox timeline would end in this film.
Yeah.
And somehow that last sequence of them having shawarma would be like, okay, I'll see you in this portal. And they both hop in there or something.
Right.
Is what we kind of thought would happen. And that didn't happen. So from a plot standpoint, I don't know that I would say, again, not qualitatively, but that is an 8 as far as its importance.
Yeah. No, I think that's actually... I think that's a good place to start going through the movie, because in some ways it reminds me some of Endgame, I think, in that we always talk about the movie kind of giving you the movie you think you're getting for the first half hour. Really, I think it's actually less than 20 minutes. The last time I watched Endgame, I noticed, before you get the 5 years later. And I felt a little bit like that with this movie, because you open with Deadpool, like with the big, like the opening credit sequence was so fun. And that
spectacular,
like just the way that that works as like the topper of the progressive credit scenes from the first two. And with the Logan, like it's so, it's kind of pitch perfect for them setting, like they're setting the tone for what Deadpool here looks like, and messing with the Logan fans, and
the irreverence to Logan as a film was absolutely spectacular.
Like even that line that I think got a big laugh from our audience. Yeah. But we go straight from that to that, like that 616 Deadpool interviewing for the Avengers with Happy Hogan scene. And that's what I want to talk about for a second.
Okay.
Because you raised the same question that I had. So I know that you and I were both thinking the same thing in the movie, and I'm still not sure that I've totally figured out. Like, are we just supposed to understand that Wade, whatever device Cable gave him, was not only a time travel device, but also allowed him to go to different timelines? Or is that like the same thing? Is that what they're telling us?
I don't know. Also, by the way, I love that this is where we're starting, because sometimes I feel like I don't want to get stuck on the qualitative stuff. It was an awesome, incredible ride. This is the kind of fun theory I like. So it was really fun to see Happy Hogan in general. So I think between that opening,
who, by the way, looked good, right?
He looked good.
Like, I feel like the last couple times I've seen Jon Favreau, I'm like,
he's given up a little bit, but he showed up here.
Yeah. And from a symbolic perspective, like clearly that is
obviously
he was not, the cameo was not really a Happy Hogan cameo at that point.
It's a nostalgia play.
It's like, this is where it all started.
The heart of Tony Stark and a Pepper Potts magazine. Yeah. In the background. Mean, like,
him literally going to the guy that birthed the entire MCU to ask to be a part of it.
Right.
Is like, and that's like, what I mean. Like,
you're
that's,
not really the guy, though, right? Like, can you get him?
What is your power? Parallel parking. Also, did you notice the photo of Tony and Tom Holland? You don't see Peter because of the No Way Home.
Yeah, he's. It was blocked by something.
It's like the frame is out of view.
So good, all that stuff, but yeah. How did he actually get there? And I always hesitate to bring up questions like this. I got to remind people that we just walked out of the theater. There's no Google to bounce this stuff off of. So like, yes, maybe by Saturday, everyone knows the answer to this question and we just missed it. It's possible. It was a freaking wild ride.
Yeah. And maybe it was a throwaway line that we didn't.
Yeah. So I think it's the time travel device. But as far as I know, that device didn't travel universes, just traveled time within his, what is it, 10005 or something they call it?
Yeah.
Universe, the Foxverse.
So that's my other question, though. Is, because we see him after all that, like, go back to his universe where Colossus and, I'm not even going to get into like the James McAvoy, Patrick Stewart of it all, but let's just look at, we know that he lives in, like, this movie starts in the same universe that the other Deadpool movies took place in.
And they claim Logan takes place in. Now, technically, they never confirmed that Logan and Deadpool take place in the same universe as like X3. They don't confirm that, but they confirm that Logan's with Deadpool.
Okay, so here's my question then, and I'm not jumping fully ahead plot-wise, but I think it makes sense to talk about this here for a moment. If that is the case, then like I think it's been confirmed. We talked about this in our Logan episode, that movie is not like canon to the, like that is not the end of the X-Men story that Bryan Singer started. I think that was my sense.
That's not the end of the Days of Future Past Logan. That's what you're saying, correct?
Correct. Yeah. Like I think it could be headcanon wise. Like I think it's ambiguous enough where you could get there. But my understanding was always that Mangold and Jackman wanted it to kind of be a standalone, just like swan song for the character. So if that's the case,
the Mangold joke in this was so funny. Oh, I can't remember, but I remember laughing so hard.
No, he's
Mangold like, already did that.
He's like, please stop. And yeah, it was like Mangold tried.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm wondering, I don't think that the intention originally was for Deadpool to take place in the same universe as Logan. I think if anything, to the extent it needed to take place in any universe, I think it would have been the kind of reboot McAvoy universe because of the cameo that we get in Deadpool 2.
Mm-hmm.
But if we are buying now that Deadpool and Logan take place in the same universe, which they have to, because that's the whole anchor being thing, which we'll get into, then
that seemed like the important detail for the MCU crossover. Keep going.
Yes. Yeah. Then why is X-23 not in that universe?
Why did X-23 get pulled out to the void?
Yeah.
Well, we don't know. Maybe something happened, right?
Yeah, but I guess I'm just confused because like the Logan that winds up, and again, not to, we'll get there in more substance, but the Logan that winds up in Deadpool's universe is a Logan from some other universe. But she also gets brought back in from the void and is part of this whole like kind of Fox swan song, as though she's like part of what's being, you know, said goodbye to, and then it's nice that she's brought back. But I guess I'm just confused, like why wouldn't she just still be in that universe?
Well, again, the headcanon here, and this is not perfect, is couldn't she have gone on to done something that would get her?
Yeah, but yeah, I guess. Or maybe Paradox like was just, I mean, maybe that's how everybody got there, is he was like poaching people from, because it can't be that people were causing like Nexus events.
The other headcanon that people like to do is it's the slightly different one.
Oh, right.
Right. Couldn't you say that theoretically? It's like a universe adjacent version of her. But I will say there was a throwaway line early on about, or middle of the movie or so, about that they had pruned Casanova, I think her name was. Cassandra, sorry. They had pruned her.
It is Cassandra Nova.
Oh, look at me. Just to have her run that job in the void. So maybe he was breaking rules. So maybe he just broke a rule with her.
I mean,
I'm saying for some other reason.
Yeah, I do. I think that's the best explanation for all of it, because that like that's one of the questions that was answered immediately, and I appreciated it. He's like where this falls in the post Loki season 2 TVA status quo. Cause I think we were all nice. I think we were always wondering like one, it's a show and you don't often see the movies give a lot of attention to what the shows have done. And two, it was, you know, season 2 of a show. And you know, the whole point of this movie is kind of like a lot of people have not kept up and they're trying to pull people back in. So, but they very quickly established the TVA is exactly where we left it in Loki season 2. It's like a force for good now, and this guy is just a rogue basically trying to make the TVA what it used to be,
which I appreciated.
Yeah, I and
giving
so
clarity on that.
So it might be that he's out there like he's poaching people, trying to do whatever it is he's trying to do. I guess that's the best headcanon, unless there's a clearer explanation that we haven't seen.
Okay, more questions on this front.
Yeah.
What was the machine that the TVA, like, they were creating a machine anyways? Like, it seemed like B-15 knew of that machine, so they had some use for it.
Yeah, or it might have been like a relic of a prior time, like something that
he was just secretly trying to revitalize it.
I think that was kind of my takeaway, like, or that he had figured out, like, maybe it was something that you know had like a design within the TVA handbook or something.
Because the new TVA would not have a machine like that,
right? Yeah, which is why I think she's like, you know, it's an unauthorized use, unless maybe there's, I don't know, like maybe there's a very specific instance in which it makes sense to have a machine like that as the TVA. Like, it would make sense that the organization would have had something like, because it's almost like it's sort of performing the same function as Eliath, I guess. I mean, it's basically just eating a timeline all at once.
Gosh, there's so much to get into. On the different timeline thing.
Yeah.
Do you think that them leaving the Fox universe as a thing, which was surprising to both of us?
Yeah.
Do you think that, like, maybe the way they're setting up Secret Wars is by leaving that open? Do you think that that's actually a step toward it eventually being a Fox universe versus a Sacred Timeline universe thing?
That is, yeah, we were talking about this before the movie.
Well, because if it wasn't going to be that, why not just have that universe end?
Yeah.
And maybe Wade pulls his friends out of it to the Sacred Timeline or something. I was so surprised there wasn't more of that.
Yeah.
So they're clearly leaving it open for a purpose.
Well, so, okay, but see, that's what I mean with them giving us the movie that we thought we would be getting early on. Like, it's Wade, it's the 616 kind of interview with Happy Hogan, but then it's also that moment when he's first pulled into the TVA and the whole conversation about, like, you're special. I don't get it, but someone high up says you're special. And that is, like, that's what I was thinking we were getting. Like, we're getting Deadpool plucked out of this dying universe that nobody cares about anymore, and he's brought into the MCU, and now it's so fun because we also get a variant of Wolverine, and we have Deadpool and Wolverine both in the MCU. That's great. And that's kind of what they make you think you're getting. And then I love that throughout the rest of the movie from then on, which is, I think, so smart for a Deadpool movie. There's this meta level of him rejecting that premise and then making it instead all about saving his universe and saving the Fox universe and highlighting what was fun and great about that. And then that's just the rest of the movie. So, like, from a metatextual criticism level, I think it's really smart and really well done. And I also think Marvel knows what it's doing, so that whenever we're looking at, like, the fiction, like, in-universe side of it, I think that there's some sleight of hand going on, and they maybe are, they're creating a situation where, like, the universe that Monica Rambeau was left in at the end of the Marvels could be the same universe that Deadpool and Wolverine are both in now. And then when you look at it, like, okay, I don't know how they would go about doing this or if they care, but, like, you and I have kind of speculated some. McAvoy is still clearly young enough. I mean, he's younger than Patrick Stewart was when he started. Fassbender's in the same boat. We now have, like, Wolverine back in the costume. We now have, like we know Beast is there as Kelsey Grammer. Like,
are you getting at they could leave the door open for more X-Men films to still exist in their own universe?
I think they would still, yes and no. I don't know. I don't think that we would get, like, another X-Men film.
Will it ever come together in one Sacred Timeline?
That's what I'm wondering.
I don't know the answer to that.
I don't know if they will come together. I think that they could clash. Like, what you and I were talking about on the way there was, are they basically going to make the Fox universe, the Fox film universe, the equivalent to, like, the Marvel Comics Ultimate Universe, which those were like the two universes left standing in the lead up to Secret Wars, the comic. And if they are still, this was like one of the big questions I had and still have going into it and leaving it, is Marvel still intent on walking the same path that they've been planning to walk since 2019? How much has changed with like the shift in the culture, the different leadership at Disney, the fact that there are projects now that were available that they didn't necessarily know were available at the time? Like, my point being, if they're looking to still do Secret Wars, I think that this actually gives them a really interesting way to do that, where you have two sets of characters that you're legitimately invested in. I just don't know if they, like this movie, I mean, with the whole montage at the end, it also feels like they're trying
to...
The
end of it, kind of.
Yeah.
You wouldn't do that if it was just kicking off the new
But saga. Yeah. Well, and it's like it's not as though they're doing anything to like ramp up. Yeah, like that's what's weird. It's not like you ever see the rest of the X-Men cast in this movie in a way that would make you think like, you know, this is
the Magneto joke.
Oh man,
he's gonna be the next one, right? Yeah, let's go.
I think. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that's one possibility, and the other possibility is that this is really just like, this is the end to the entire Fox universe that none of those series ever got.
Multiverse of Madness is such a good call out, because this is a better made film than Multiverse of Madness, mm-hmm. I think. But the parallel is apt, because the movie ended up not being necessarily what everyone thought it would be, in the ways that it really was more of a closer for Deadpool and for Logan and the Fox universe than a kickoff to what they are like now in the MCU. But Kevin still said that. So in my mind, I was thinking about this while you're talking, Kevin still said it. So there are three different outcomes, I think, of what he was meaning. Uh-huh. One, maybe he was just meaning the importance of seeing those characters in a film made by Marvel Studios, in a rated R film, like still the same vibe as Deadpool. Maybe he meant like that, in that it's important of like, now we own these Fox characters and we can make movies like that. So maybe that's what he meant by importance, not necessarily MCU timeline importance, but just like Marvel Studios is now making these films, and that's a first step.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what he means. The second thing is that maybe he's just overstating it. Like in the moment he was excited.
Yeah.
Or the third thing is that maybe he has a more grand master plan that we just don't know yet. Like maybe we'll look back that this did set up that the Fox universe is still around, and that ends up being a player, like everything we just said. So maybe the importance isn't felt for a couple of years.
Yeah. I mean,
again, not the quality of it.
No.
The impact on the MCU. And by the way, that's a fascinating discussion too. We had in the car, the MCU is kind of changing what that means. I was bringing up to you that like when the MCU, like when he says it has impact on the MCU, I kind of hear that as it has impact on the sacred timeline, but that's not necessarily true anymore. Like back in the day during the Infinity Saga, the MCU meant a movie that was taking place during the Infinity Saga in the same universe.
Uh-huh.
Now that we have all these universes, I think you and I would tell people X-Men 97 is the MCU, but I think what we're really meaning is it's a show made by Marvel Studios, not necessarily in the sacred timeline anymore. So like Deadpool 2 is not made by Marvel Studios. Deadpool and Wolverine is made by Marvel Studios, even though it spends very little time in the sacred timeline. My point is that's just becoming an interesting discussion too.
Yeah.
So when Kevin says it has impact on the MCU, I don't know if he means the sacred timeline or just Marvel Studios films.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I always think, I mean, even the sacred timeline, like that's not even really a fair litmus test anymore now for what counts as the MCU, not even because of X-Men 97, but even just the phrase sacred timeline comes from Loki, which takes place largely outside of the sacred timeline. So like if we were to like by that.
Right, but this movie uses that exact terminology.
No, I know. But I'm saying like Loki is like, I don't think we can. I don't think that there is a one for one to like the MC, even the Infinity Saga and the Sacred Timeline. Like, I guess there's a one for one there kind of. But I think that story continues because it's like the Loki from the movie, you know, from Endgame that we saw, which is part of the Sacred Timeline, then moves on into Loki, which then you could look at everything that happens in Loki as sprouting everything else from No Way Home to here. And so it's like it is all still an extension of the Sacred Timeline, like of what was started there, because of the way that it's still branching from the same place. But it's like it's a weird byproduct of rights issues ultimately. Like I think if Marvel had not had X-Men sold off and Spider-Man sold off, then I don't think we would have to have this conversation. But I think that they're just having to get back to a place of like everything that we're doing is just like it's all kind of Marvel now, and people are going to have to figure out like how things are getting brought in and what's getting brought in. But it is weird. Like, I mean, like the X-Men stuff is, because I know some people even after No Way Home felt very strongly that a full MCU rewatch now requires all three Raimi Spider-Mans and the two Mark Webb films because those feed into No Way Home. And I can see that argument, but I don't feel that way. And I think that that's one of the interesting things about this movie is it kind of doesn't feel that way either. Like on the one hand, it's really honoring the Fox stuff, but in a way that makes very clear, like, this is a separate thing and it's over and like we're giving it its due, but
yeah.
Yeah. I mean like
the Fantastic Four with Johnny Storm seems like it's over.
Yeah. Well, and you have like, it's not like you even see like Elektra and Blade at the dinner table at the end, you know,
which is another fascinating plot thing. Like a question I had was I thought that as they're jumping through the portal, they had like what, 4 seconds or whatever, and Eliath was coming. I thought Eliath was supposed to eat everybody. That was the implication, right? But yeah. Then you see shots of them still alive. And he specifically asks B-15, can you grab them and give them a happy ending or whatever?
Yeah. Well, and we do, I mean, we know that like Cassandra survives. So, which, I mean, she's like Omega level powerful, but maybe that's like, maybe she can withstand Eliath. And so like,
so X-23 other characters was, can?
Well, no, but I'm just saying like, maybe she, like her power set seems like it would be able to like turn back Eliath, I guess is my point, if that was the goal. So maybe everybody didn't get disintegrated.
She turned them back right as they went through the portal.
I mean, she made it out somehow.
Yeah, I think she otherwise, was technically like, still in the Ant-Man head, but yeah.
They were all in the Ant-Man. Well, I guess she was in like the head of the Ant-Man.
Yeah, some of them were out in the field or in the desert. Right in within his arms. I'm getting really picky, but you know what I'm saying. I was just wondering.
We're talking about like the skull versus like in the correct. In the arm and whether both should survive.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard for me to map out the effect of Eliath on a giant Paul Rudd skeleton. But that is, no, I mean, that's a fair question. I need to go back because I didn't know that we saw a clip of the entire group after they went through. I know we saw a clip of them looking up as they were jumping through because I assumed that they were all, that was the end. And then they just were able to bring X-23 back somehow at the end.
Before we keep talking about timeline stuff, I need to say the Chris Evans thing was so spectacular. The introduction to how they executed it was so funny, especially the part where he goes, oh, he's going to say it. He's going to say it. It's like playing the heroic music. Yeah. He jumps down and you and I are like looking at each other like, oh my gosh, is this going to be him?
Oh, I knew it though. Cause I saw the costume underneath. Like you know, I'm paying attention to those Captain America costumes.
You know, it's Captain America and costume. So that's like double whammy for you.
I'm like, what? Okay. I see the red. I see that they're trying to, I see what they're doing here, but I see that those unstable molecules.
But the Avengers Assemble. Flame on. Yeah. What the? Who's that? That was pretty funny.
No, I...
we don't know this guy.
That whole... like, well, I want to talk about the cameos in general, but I before we get there, one thing we haven't really talked about at all is the introduction of Wolverine, like the first time that we saw the digging up the corpse. But I think that like that was like when I feel like the movie was like it started really cooking. In just a fun way, like not in this, like, again, not like, oh, we're really making monumental, you know, Marvel Cinematic Universe history here. But like you could tell like there was a joy to going through and looking at all of these different versions of Wolverine.
Yeah, the Wolverines, like, Henry Cavill.
Like the man, like the Cavalrine.
That was so funny. And the shot at DC there with that line. Yeah. So funny.
Like that would, which also like, I would love if Marvel would hire Henry Cavill for something. Cause I think that would be really fun. But like the comic accurate, like height Wolverine was so great.
That was so funny.
The Age of Apocalypse Wolverine, where he's only got the one hand. And my favorite, I think, was just the, what Deadpool says, the classic yellow and brown John Byrne Wolverine suit.
Yeah.
Which is like a ton of people know that suit. I think a smaller, much smaller subsect of people would associate that with John Byrne specifically, who drew a ton of X-Men comics and a bunch of Wolverine comics with him in like the blue and yellow. But that is this very iconic moment when John Byrne reimagines it as this different color scheme, which looked incredible on camera, but was such a like for fans in like a very specific way. Like that is not like all the other ones were just like funny or like really noteworthy, like Henry Cavill or he's really short. But I love that they just give us this like. The suit also looked incredible, like the brown and yellow, and the Hulk.
Yeah. But also just the fact that they kept commenting on the suit. Like, they made the suit a really big thing. And I can't remember all the lines right now because there were so many. But there was one specific line about...
Like you're not embarrassed to be in a superhero movie.
Like, why haven't you worn this before? Because, superheroes weren't embarrassed to be dressing like superheroes or whatever. Yeah. There were some good lines with that. Okay, we'll be right back after a quick word from these sponsors. And by the way, since I don't typically have this kind of freedom, everyone look at this shirt, please.
Wow.
Please look at this shirt. Nerdriot.shop, promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK. Look at this. How appropriate to be wearing my OB TVA shirt, by the way.
I've got my X-Men hat.
Oh.
I actually love this hat. I wear this hat a lot.
It's pretty dope.
I'm only not wearing it now because my hair is so short that if I wear a hat, it looks like I don't have any.
Nerdriot.shop, they have all of your Deadpool and Wolverine merch that you need. And check out organicpricebooks.com.
Oh.
Organicpricebooks.com. Look at this. Real here.
I have to show this. This is the... Oh, I can bring that up to the camera.
Oh, yeah. See, this is the kind of flexibility we have at the Earl Sanctum Sanctorum.
This is the latest product.
You can't hear him, but it's the latest product for organicpricebooks.com. Promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK.
Just got this a couple days ago.
It's a Daredevil comic.
Yeah, it's the Chip Zdarsky Daredevil run that Daredevil Born Again is pulling some from. So if people are excited about Deadpool and Wolverine and are excited about... Man, we've got like such a fun slate of things coming up between Fantastic Four and Daredevil.
And we're about to get into cameos with Elektra being one of them. So it's a good
time.
Yeah, by the way, holy cow. This movie is so fun for so many reasons, but another reason it's fun is like I feel like we've been in a desert and this movie was the oasis and now we're finally kind of emerging from the desert. Like, I feel like Marvel's got the hype again. I feel like they have a game plan again, and we're about to go through a gauntlet of what I anticipate being fantastic content.
Yeah.
We talked about
Literally.
We talked about, like, honestly, the Captain America Brave New World project was probably my personal least anticipated project of the next couple of years.
Amen.
But the trailer was so slam dunk to me that now I don't know that I can say that. So just the fact that we're going to go from, in some order again, pending Comic-Con, we're going to go from Born Again, from Brave New World to Born Again, Daredevil Born Again, Fantastic Four in there. I'm guessing, this is my bold take, that we're going to get a Spider-Man 4 announcement on Saturday.
Oh, man.
And then just the ramp up to Secret Wars. And again, go check out our other episode if you want to hear us talk about that. But anyways, we're about to go through quite the run as we let Samwise outside go to the bathroom. Anyways, organicpricedbooks.com and nerdriot.shop. Robbie, before we get into the cameos and just some of the nitty gritty things that really worked, I had one last question on the timelines.
Oh, yeah.
From the first section, we didn't really get into this idea of a, not a sacred being. What did they call it in the movie? I'm blanking. It's 12:30.
Oh, anchor being.
An anchor being. Any thoughts on that? Is there any comic background to that? And if that's the case, does every universe have an anchor being, and who would be the MCU sacred timeline anchor being, you think?
Yeah. So I immediately thought of the What If episode. Do you remember that? The 1602 episode, which I probably have a fresher memory of because I rewatched it when we covered that comic. But that whole thing is built around these, like, there they call it like forerunners, and they're people from other universes,
right?
Which I think Monica Rambeau is then kind of supposed to be, where she's like maybe like an incursion, like causing thing, which seems to be almost the opposite of the anchor being. So it's like, on the one, like, we have these beings that are being that come from one universe to another and then wind up kind of heralding the end of that because of the incursion side. But then now we're also told that they're anchor beings, where if they leave their home universe, that won't cause an incursion, but it will somehow cause like a spaghettification, I guess, like we got in.
But interestingly, maybe even 2,000 years later.
Yeah. Which I think is...
So it's possible, just theoretically, that Wanda Maximoff was, or Tony Stark was, in the MCU Sacred Timeline, but maybe it still wouldn't cause the demise of the Sacred Timeline for thousands of years.
Well, and what's interesting about that is the Sacred Timeline is the Sacred Timeline because He Who Remains...
deemed it so.
Right. So I would think that if Tony, for instance, were the anchor being... he wouldn't have been allowed to die.
Right. So does an anchor being have to be immortal, or just every universe has an end eventually, and it's whenever that person eventually dies, you know?
Yeah, that's a good question. Or maybe Loki's is like, I don't even know if that counts now, but like I was trying to think of...
It's also a new term in terminology in general that we've just never heard in Loki, the show.
True. My thought immediately when they were talking about anchor beings, and I'm glad that you brought that back up, because we only really talked about that in the movie at the beginning. But I immediately thought of Tobey Maguire in Spider-Man, just because I was thinking it's so metatextual. It reminds me a lot of Across the Spider-Verse 2 with like the origin moments and like your canon moments.
Canon events, yeah. There's been like 20 different names. Nexus beings, Nexus moments, canon events, anchor beings.
I just was thinking, again, and this could be totally baseless, but the X-Men universe or any amount of the Fox stuff being brought in always made sense to me moving forward, because there's so much of it. Like there's a lot to kind of, like a lot of grist for the mill. Whereas on the
that's a phrase that I haven't heard ever.
On the
that's Spider- a Louisiana
special. on the Spider-Man side, though, No Way Home notwithstanding, to talk about like, there's been all this speculation, right, that Toby will wind up again in some, like, Secret Wars type film, maybe or maybe not. I don't know if we have any real reason to think that, but a lot of people do. And this actually now makes, like, I could imagine
more sense for that?
Kind of. Because, like, again, from, like, a meta perspective, that universe only exists because that one character is in it. Like, that's what I think they're trying to do here, is, like, with the Anchor Beings thing, like, trying to paint it as, like, almost the way we would perceive certain characters within a film universe. So, like, I do think Tony Stark is kind of that, in that a lot of people would say the MCU has never been the same since Tony Stark left, or RDJ left.
Or wouldn't have happened without Tony Stark.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, so I don't know. But I think that that is, like, that is certainly an intentional inclusion. I do feel like the, like, couple thousand years from now thing really complicates it, because it doesn't make the stakes feel very, like, if nothing's, like, if nothing is imminent. Like, I know that, like, here it was fine because the Time Ripper was in play, but, like, yeah.
Did you ever watch Three Body Problem?
I actually never did.
Okay, never mind. Yeah, okay, never mind. I'm not going to spoil anything, but for people who watched it, you know what I'm about to say, or I was about to say.
I do think we could have a whole other conversation probably on just the Anchor Being side and what that could mean.
Going back to how important is this film's impact on the MCU side of this all, not to keep going back to this, but that's another example of, I think going in, it's fair for you and I to say that we felt like this could be the movie to finally wrangle in, yeah, and get all of the answers of what's going on in this multiverse saga. In fact, we have said that on this podcast,
yeah,
multiple times. And yet, I will say, while spectacular in its filmmaking, we're left with more questions on that front still.
Yeah.
And not only did they not give us answers, they didn't bring in the characters from the Fox timeline. They didn't close, yeah, off the timeline. And they're now introducing this idea of anchor beings, which is new.
Yeah.
So I think I'm not confused, but it's more complicated than it was before.
I think
it
gives us more questions than answers, I think.
So what is going to be the film? It's not going to be Brave New World. What is going to be the film? Yeah. To finally, or Daredevil as a show.
I mean,
show,
Fantastic Four could be, but that makes me,
like, Reed Richards discovers everything, yeah, that's going on and lays it out for us.
Yeah, which, I mean, you know, kind of works with, like, the way that they were setting up Nathaniel Richards or Kang, or He Who Remains, discovering it in the 31st century. Like, that, you know, it Fantastic Four, I mean, the entire, like, when we talk about Secret Wars, I think a lot of people know this, but a lot of people probably don't. Jonathan Hickman's whole Avengers saga that leads to Secret Wars, that all starts in his Fantastic Four book that he started in the late 2000s. And then he built that and then basically shifted that narrative over to the Avengers. But it was the same kind of ongoing narrative. And it was all really about Reed, like, discovering the multiverse. So, and then, you know, it, like, minor spoiler, I guess, but, like, Reed is in some ways the protagonist of Secret Wars. Like, we think of it as an Avengers event, but in the comics, Hickman really treats it as, like, the finale to his Fantastic Four run. So I certainly think that the movie could be that. I think what makes me nervous about that is we, like, in the comics, you're getting that after 50 years of Fantastic Four comics.
Correct. This is the introduction to the Fantastic Four.
Right. Like, I don't know if I want... I think I get a little nervous about introducing a new set of characters, especially when I'm so excited about just the introduction of them and also making it a vehicle to, but.
I saw an interview with Kevin Feige where he was asked what project he's most excited about during this press tour. And he said, well, obviously I'm excited about all of them. It's like asking your favorite child, right, blah, blah, typically. He said, but you know what? It was on the podcast. It was on their podcast.
Yeah.
He
said,
if I had to choose one, it'd be Fantastic Four. And partially he gave a shout out because of what Matt Shakman's doing, which, you know, I like. But maybe there's some of that to it. I don't know. Maybe he knows like that is going to be the pivotal thing, or that movie's going to set up Avengers Kang Dynasty or Secret Wars Part One or whatever it is first, you know?
I mean, that is like that. That's the only hiccup that I see right now in this theory that the X-Men universe could kind of be this alternate one that's bumping up against the main 616 is like, what is that? Like, what does that do with the Fantastic Four universe? Because Feige's kind of made a point to kind of to poke at that not being the same universe.
I think it'd be cool if one of these universes did die. Like, I would love a Fantastic Four that survives its universe, but they now carry the weight of they've failed their universe. Or some one of these. Maybe it's a Sony universe or something that fails.
Yeah.
And Toby feels the weight or something.
You could also, I mean, like,
they can't all save them all, I don't think.
No, and you could see, like, I think maybe that's the beauty of this movie is, I think it would be more impactful. Like, rather than just give us a 2-hour long, like, farewell to the Fox universe, fully, or a, like not even farewell, because we got that in a different way. What I mean is, instead of a 2-hour long, like, the Fox universe is dying and Wade's able to pull out three people, I like that they subverted that here. I think it would be much more impactful and like, have more of that Infinity War moment if, like, you have the Fantastic Four. Because the whole thing that separates them from, like, the Avengers is they're explorers. Like, there's this kind of optimism of, like, they're not fighting primarily, they're discovering. So you could see, like, oh, maybe the Fantastic Four do discover the multiverse and do figure out how to travel it. And maybe they come back and, like, their whole world is gone or something like that. Like, their whole timeline. Like, that seems really interesting. And I like the idea of them being dropped into a different universe, like you're saying.
Let's get into some of the other cameos.
But so really, like, the fun thing here is act two of this movie is just, it's cameos and really funny jokes, I thought, and really great action sequences, a couple. But I wanted to, before we get to those, just tick off some of these cameos and talk about them real quick.
Please.
We talked Chris Evans.
Yeah.
Which was so fun.
One. Yeah.
And he just, man, I just love Chris Evans. And I love seeing him in a Marvel movie, even as Johnny Storm. I've been reading Ryan North's Fantastic Four comic that's coming out currently, and it's so good. And that makes me really excited because I love when there's like, it's weirdly rare when a great Marvel movie lines up with a great Marvel comic. It almost always feels like
one's clicking and the other's not.
Yeah, but this feels like a good opportunity. Anyway, that was fun. Sabretooth, we saw in that TV spot. I kind of love the like build up to a big fight and then he just cuts his head off.
The Toad guy.
We saw like Lady Deathstrike, but not the same act. There were a couple characters like that, like the Juggernaut.
The first class red guy that can disappear.
Yeah, Azazel.
Azazel, yeah.
Pyro, obviously, was a pretty big character. There was a whole slew of kind of X-Men villains that were, a lot of them, I think, played by different actors. One thing that I thought was funny, did Wolverine say that Sabretooth was his brother?
In this film,
someone said that, but I couldn't hear if it was Deadpool saying that as like an Origins callback or if Logan was saying like,
our theater was pretty raucous for a media crowd in a good way.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I may have missed a few of those lines.
Elektra, we had prepared for. Luckily, we watched Daredevil 2003.
Had one of the best lines about Daredevil 2003. I can't remember, but it was something like, should we save that one? She's like, no.
Oh, yeah, he was
something like that.
Because he said something like, oh no, like Daredevil, I'm sorry. And she was like, it's fine, which I loved because that's also like Ben Affleck. Jennifer Garner and Ben Affleck were married, I think, after working together on Daredevil, and then obviously divorced. So there's also like another level of like
pettiness,
which is fun. Also on along that same line with divorce jokes,
my favorite kind.
Oh, this is Wolverine. Like, he normally has his shirt off, but he's sort of let himself go since the divorce.
Yeah.
Which is sad. Hugh Jackman and his wife split up after, like, a long time.
Yeah, which is actually low-key bummed me out.
Yeah.
I'm not one of those guys, but they were, like, this crazy love story that she was a producer on set or something. And
yeah.
Yeah, which is really... But, too bad.
But then you had such like the great moment at the end where like the shirt burns off and he's just insanely ripped.
By the way, I real quick jumping to that sequence, and I mean, I found that sequence awesome on every level.
Uh-huh.
Not only Deadpool trying to do the right thing and locking Logan out, but then still goofing around, which is very fitting for the character and pretty funny. But then I actually thought it looked incredible.
Yeah.
Just like what Logan looked like with his shirt ripped off. It was so funny, obviously. And, you know, Deadpool taking the second to look at it while he's basically dying. But then just the mask, no shirt and the pants. And then it had this like glowy electrical thing going through him. It looked like as superhero-ish as you could. I just thought I loved the whole thing.
And it was so
fun. The music
fun.
Was pretty cool.
From like the power levels perspective, what I love about it is it works. Like, it was the perfect finale to a movie about two like healing people. Like, as that being like their
the final battle per se wasn't against her.
Yeah.
In that they used their strength to beat her.
Yeah.
It was that they just could survive.
Which I love. Like, man.
Yeah.
More
cameos. Keep going.
Yeah. So before I forget, Blade, I wanted to talk about for a second. I did not expect the Wesley Snipes cameo. The people in our theater loved that one. I am grateful because Candace and I rewatched Blade two or three years ago. But
some great meta jokes with him, too.
Man. And he, like, Wesley, the thing about that movie, if you ever go back and watch it, that I think really separates it from like Daredevil or some of these like early 2000s, just big misses, is Blade knows exactly what it's doing. Like, Wesley Snipes is kind of like, he's grinning the whole movie, but not in this way where he doesn't take it seriously, but in a way where like, he's injecting this like sly, like it's like a sardonic thing almost into it where it's like, he says everything with this little
don't
grin.
Call us sardonic. I have no idea what it means. We don't know what it means.
I'm telling you, I watched, I did a Civil War, Infinity War Endgame watch.
Did you
not
really?
That long ago. And what, actually, no, it was Civil War, Ragnarok,
unreal.
Infinity War Endgame.
Unreal.
Incredible. But,
don't call us plucky.
I love all of the, like, the references.
We're optimistic, yes.
The line about, that we talked about how like a Blade movie, like there's only ever been one Blade and there will never be another Blade.
Yeah.
And then like, I feel like Wesley Snipes looks straight into the camera.
No, Deadpool does. It's pretty funny.
It cuts that's funny.
He doesn't say anything.
Yeah. Cause that is the Blade movie is coming. I was just reading a report about it the other day. Like, I think there are a lot of folks already signed on and all that, but it's a movie that has just been like hanging out there forever.
Quick side note, because that just got me thinking about a tangent. I love, and I think I read this about Deadpool in the comics, that he was a big fan of Captain America. I love that in general. This is a film where the meta commentary could have easily been very negative towards the MCU. I love that they kept this almost Miss Marvel vibe in that he is a huge fan of the Avengers. Like, even when Happy turns him down. He gives him a hug. It's not like, well, now I'm pissed at you and now I'm gonna show you. And then later when he's confessing to Logan, he says like, the Avengers didn't let me in either. As like a heartfelt, like he's bummed about it.
Yeah.
He gets a chance to see what he thinks is Captain America and he's so excited. And like in general, it never really got real negative to the Avengers. There's a couple comments that were really funny about like, you're entering the MCU at a low point.
Yeah, that was a funny one. A
couple things like that. But like, the character of Deadpool is a fan of the Avengers, and that didn't really change. And I, you know, I love that kind of stuff.
Oh no, for sure. And I
versus the opposite. The opposite would be very easy to do.
Oh, and but so cheap and like
that's what I think.
And I think it's really
like that. He has this pull.
Yeah,
like he's actually considering I could go to the Avengers universe and fight for something that matters.
Yeah,
and even he holds that up as like tempting. Uh-huh. To have a purpose like they have.
It's also interesting because I think the timeline, like that's supposed to have basically happened right post Endgame. And then we jump 6 years ahead.
2018, right? It said.
19, right, right.
18.
Oh, 18.
It said 2018. I think he was, it was.
But the proof that Tony Stark has a heart thing was on Happy's desk, right?
Yeah, but Tony Stark has had that since Iron Man.
Oh, that's true.
It was only used in his funeral once he died. But I think the point was before Infinity War, he's trying to get recruited. Like post Civil War, he's trying to join.
Right. Because he's asking like if Tony's going to interview him. Yeah, right. That makes sense.
Because he thinks Tony's alive.
Yeah.
He is alive still.
Okay. That's fun. Yeah. So he was like, I mean, that's the other, like he's wanting to join the Avengers when the MCU is like at the peak of its power.
Yeah.
And so it is funny to come back and like you're entering at a low point. I did want to talk.
Even is the other guy coming anytime soon? Or
this comes like a little bit later.
Sorry, tangent.
But no. That's good though, because one comment I had in the Deadpool fight at the end, which I want to talk about, but not at the moment. Before that, there's the line where he's like, "Can we just stop?" And he's like, no, like they're gonna keep coming. And he's like, no, I mean, stop with the multiverse. Can we just end it? Like, this hasn't been like, can we just say like it's not working? And then there's like the funny like nice pool line of him saying like, oh, I think everything's been consistently great since Endgame. That is like, that's the one I think it's really deftly handled, because I think it's just really those two lines. And neither of them are like, they're careful to not devalue what people have worked hard to make. Like, I appreciate that they don't call out any specific films or like make fun of anybody. Like, I think that the MCU has always prided itself on redeeming things that maybe didn't go the way they wanted it to, rather than just casting them aside. And I really respect the decision to maintain that here and to poke fun at themselves without
being like Quantum Mania or Secret Invasion or something.
Right. Cause then like at some point it's like, oh, well now there are people that really like whatever that project is.
Correct. I agree.
Feel like they can't enjoy it.
Right.
But the first thought I had when he said that was, is this a pivot? Like, is this in some minor or major way Marvel recognizing actually that we don't know that the multiverse saga is it anymore, and we're maybe going to move in some other direction? Because I was sitting there like, we were just talking about it. You hear that, and then you look at the slate of things coming up. Brave New World, which people are super excited about, does not seem like it would have multiversal implications. Thunderbolts does not seem like it would. Fantastic Four could. It will to some degree if it's in a different universe. But again, it's like,
I see what you're saying.
Are they pulling back in some way? Or was that just straight up a joke, kind of self-deprecating, and I'm reading into it?
I think it's a joke, self-deprecating, and you're reading into it. Mm-hmm. I don't like to always be this guy. I will say, I do think that joke offers a little glimpse into some of the problems that Marvel Studios has been feeling that I warned everybody about when you do a multiverse saga. Like 4 years ago when we started talking about this,
yeah,
these things are my concern. And so I don't know if they're you can't pivot away from it. They're trying to have their cake and eat it too, I think, which is they want the multiverse saga so they can do Deadpool and Logan. Yeah. And so they can claim the Fantastic Four in a different universe and so that they can bring in the characters they want, but they don't want it for all of the like issues it raises and connectivity and people feeling lost and people feeling like they can't pull for one character. So I don't know that you can have both. Like, I do think it is in desperate need of a film to just embrace the multiverse saga and tell us what it is and what we're headed towards.
Yeah.
I guess that I'm overreading the joke too in the other way, which is like, I think they're aware of it, but they still want to make the Fantastic Four film and they still want to do Secret Wars, which is dealing with multiverses. And so they want to get there.
I think, what's interesting is it's wound up being a great way to do that. Like No Way Home, I think, won people over so much because it gave this sense of closure. Like, again, maybe we will get Toby again or Andrew again or both in some capacity, but I think for a lot of people it just felt like an honoring of these stories that seemed to kind of unceremoniously end. And so, like, I think that the multiverse saga so far has done well when it's done that, because it's very clear. And I felt the same way here, much more than I thought I would. Like, on the way over on our live, we were talking about how this is different from No Way Home, because No Way Home had very little larger implications beyond Spider-Man, and this one seemed to. But really, in the end, it is super similar, and maybe it has even less, because they don't even end up in the sacred timeline, like you were saying. But I think
it does come back to what we've said from day one. It's either that they don't really care about all those details and they just want to use all these plot devices and all these different characters for fun, which is okay. That's maybe one option. Or Kevin has a whiteboard somewhere and it's a master plan. And on that whiteboard includes anchor points or anchor people, for example. And Nexus events, and he's got it all mapped out. We just haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah.
And it's one of those two things.
I do think, like, I think we need to check in. I think what would be fun on this podcast, and people can hold us to it, is to check in on this each time a new thing comes out over the next year or two.
Yeah, which we've been doing. Because the Marvels kind of talked about it too a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, they certainly build it that way. I mean, Quantumania was billed as the start of all of it, and it's like
there's been little glimpses in all these films.
Yeah. But I wonder, is there going to be, I mean, we had no post-credit scenes here in terms of moving the ball forward.
Which, I'm not going to lie, I was a little bit disappointed because I thought that after the whole movie ended with the way it did with the Fox universe and stuff, there would be one teaser of...
Right. But yeah, no, I mean, I think we should, to really figure out whether Kevin was just, you know, on the hype train or trying to communicate something, I think we're going to have to periodically check in.
Yep.
But I do think...
I think they're going to give us all of it in that first Avengers film, Avengers 5.
Yeah.
And it might just be like this, like an exponential graph where it's like we're just getting tiny little tastes and then they're going to ramp it all up and that whole movie is going to be about it. And they're just going to say, well, we gave you hints at it. Here's the main course.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe you and I were wanting more of a linear step up where it's like this film dives into it a little bit and then Fantastic Four does a little bit more. Maybe all of the things we're talking about is going to happen not until the first new Avengers movie.
Well, and, you know, it has been such a change, like a turning point moment, this movie for Marvel, just from the way they've released it to the way they've talked about it to the Fox stuff, that I could imagine, like, I could see how Kevin would say this is operating in a way similar to how, like, the first Avengers movie operated, maybe, where it's like, you're seeing these elements come together in terms of the multiverse saga. You're seeing how it works kind of like with them using the Doctor Strange portal, but also the TVA inclusion, Eliath being brought back. I loved the like Eliath from Loki season one, episode 5.
That was amazing. Golly. Also, just Eliath looked awesome, and I loved having
and
Eliath
looked exactly
in
the same, yeah, which I thought
it
was great.
Oh, and those little creatures.
What a
weird detail, but they included the detail of the little creatures.
Which I remember when we had Kate Herron on the podcast, she was talked about how much she loved those, the director of Loki. But I say that to say,
the same pyramids, a helicarrier in the void.
Which, by the way, is where Renslayer was left at the end of Loki season 2. I noticed when I was rewatching.
In the void.
And there's a clear shot of the pyramid. So, like, in the void, I think. Mm. Anyway, near that section. But I could see how Deadpool and Wolverine is pulling from enough of what we've gotten over the last couple years to work now as kind of the landmark moment.
Mm-hmm.
And you can now, like, the genius of it is, for us, it doesn't move the MCU forward in some huge way. But think about if this is the first Marvel movie you've seen since No Way Home, or maybe you saw, like, Endgame and then just No Way Home and this. Like, if you haven't seen Loki, which I do feel like there is a big, like a big chunk of the audience here does not watch Marvel TV, but maybe watches the big deal Marvel movies.
And let's take a second to say, if that's you out there listening to this podcast and you're just finding this podcast because of this film, if you had to watch something, it seems like you really need to watch Loki season 1 and 2.
Yeah,
only 6 episodes long. They're both like Emmy nominated, amazing television shows. It's only like 5 hours of your time.
Yeah.
You really should watch it because it's really informing all of these films now.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, I really think that there's a world where you could basically, and I was thinking about this going in, this will probably change depending on how Avengers 5 and 6 go. But right now, you could kind of just watch Loki. Like, you could go from Avengers Endgame as the capstone to the Infinity Saga,
sure,
and then just watch Loki. And that kind of gives you the baseline for the new status quo. You shouldn't,
you would miss a lot of awesome stuff.
No. There are a lot of great stories out there.
Right.
But it is kind of nice because they're creating a new, like, first rung.
Yeah.
Which I think is what the Avengers movie was.
Right.
So now I'm like, you know, after the Avengers, Iron Man 3 had nothing to do with Infinity Stones. In phase 2, Winter Soldier had nothing to do with Infinity Stones. Ant-Man had nothing to do with Infinity Stones. You really just had the Dark World, Guardians, and then
Thor: The Dark World,
Age of Ultron. So it's like, you know, half of those projects. So I think it's fair that they could introduce this as being now like a real moving force and not have it show up that much in these next two movies. But
okay.
Yeah.
More cameos.
Yeah. No. Well, we're done with cameos. Although the only other cameo in this section was the Gambit.
Yeah.
By Channing Tatum.
Which, unbelievable.
It made me so glad that Gambit was such a standout in X-Men 97.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of people would not.
That's probably the only way I would have known who this is, to be honest.
I mean,
And it was confirmed in the credits that Lady Deadpool was Blake Lively, right? His wife.
And we also had Matthew McConaughey and Nathan Fillion.
Oh, we did.
As some of the Deadpools.
Oh, didn't know that.
I mean, no one ever took their mask off, so you just had to go. I caught, those are the only names that I caught aside from Blake Lively's.
Oh, you were watching. Smart.
But I loved the Honda Odyssey fight. I thought that was really fun.
Yeah.
Just as like keeping all of the action that confined.
Yeah.
And I loved the...
By the way, right before what led to the fight, I loved Wolverine snapping and actually just calling him out. And then Deadpool not saying anything for like 3 seconds.
Yeah.
What's kind of cool about a character like Deadpool is the running bit is he's a merc with a mouth.
Uh-huh.
And he won't ever shut up. That's what this whole movie's about. That's what all the Deadpools have been about.
Right.
So whenever he doesn't speak, it becomes that much more effective.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the person who says every curse word possible, whenever that becomes normal language, sometimes the least offensive words become the ones that stand out. I always used to tell the story of Halo. When I used to play Halo a ton, you would hear the worst things you've ever heard in your life called you, and it would just start rolling off. Like, it didn't matter. It's like, that's what you were. But if someone called you a BK, which stood for bad kid, if you're a bad kid, that was like, whoa. It's like jive turkey. You know, it's like, if you're a bad kid, like, hey, that would start real fights.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what this is, where it's like, he can't say anything any more offensive, but it's like the silence now can become the offensive thing. Or like when he dumbs it down to something that's not offensive,
that's
the impactful moment now, because the rest is. So anyways,
I agree.
That whole bit. He just like doesn't say anything. He goes, okay, I'm going to fight you now.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to kill you.
No, I loved that moment, and I loved how much of that in this whole movie we got, like both from Logan and Wade. They were like, it wasn't just, oh, they're like, Logan's gruff and Wade is like joking the entire time, and at the very end we get a meaningful moment. Like, they're interspersed throughout.
Like, even the Avengers talk with Happy Hogan, was that pretty sincere, actually?
I think so, yeah.
Like,
I think
he made some jokes, but yeah, were we supposed to take that he was wanting to do something with his life?
Well, and even like I thought so. And I like that the Happy line of like, they do it because people need them, not because like they need you, not you need it or whatever. And I like that, like, that he calls back to that at the very end with that finale scene we were talking about. So there is like, I mean, it's what I liked more about Deadpool 2 is it felt like it brought some of that to the forefront.
But right now, off the top of your head, would you go 3, 2, 1?
For sure.
That's what I would do.
Yeah. The only other things I wanted to talk about from that section kind of lead perfectly into the last one. Like, we talked some about the Blade comments, the Ryan Reynolds like appearing in Blade 3 and talking about how he's surprised he hasn't retired yet was funny. But I think what separates really any superhero movie, like the great ones from the good ones, is the villain. And I really loved Cassandra as a villain here. I thought it was...
Not Casanova.
I thought, like... And also, if you view Paradox as the villain, I loved...
I thought Paradox was great, by the way. Yeah. We haven't shouted
Matthew
him out
McFadden
at all.
Matthew McFadden is, like... Succession,
but legitimately funny.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, he's like, dude, if we have, yeah, if you enjoyed his acting, what he does on Succession is really fun. But I thought he was perfect for that role.
And his F-bomb at the end got the room laughing.
Oh, that's true. But I thought that the combination of those two, like, we got kind of both served really important purposes within the story, and they gave us really great, like, great characters for Deadpool and Wolverine to play off of. But I just thought, like, I had heard some things from the filmmakers talking about how happy they were with how Cassandra's performance, well, how Emma Corrin's performance had turned out, but how the character turned out. And I just wasn't sure how much I was going to be into it. But I just, like, I thought, like, she was the right level of maniacal. She was really scary, but I kind of, like, I understood her. I liked the moment with her and Logan a lot.
Mm.
Like, I just thought, like, it was one of those villains that I just felt worked kind of through and through for me.
It was also one of those villains that wasn't really the full villain, like you were saying. Like,
yeah.
It's not like the whole movie was just building up to seeing her. It was right. They were trying to use her as the vehicle just to get out, to really face the issues with the TVA that they had. So it was kind of, the villainry was split between 33% Paradox, 33% her, and then like 33% just like the system, basically.
Yeah. Which I think is important, because it would have been weird to make her the big bad.
Right. I'm just saying it's different than a big bad, basically.
But I like how she kind of got to be at the end by like merging with Paradox's plan to then give like Wade and Logan a thing to have that final moment fighting. But I the reason I think about that here is that final scene with Blade and Elektra and X-23 and Gambit was, for me, such a like, man, just like a standout superhero fight scene. Like, I'm just looking at all, like looking at all the Gambit moves where he's throwing the cards and like Wolverine in the suit and it, like Elektra and Blade. Like, it just looked like I was like reading a comic book page.
It for sure was so comic booky. When would you ever get Blade and Elektra and Gambit and X-23?
Like, and just so
fighting Juggernaut and just.
Oh man, also the Laura Azazel. Like X-23 like cutting off his feet at the ankles. Such a brutal Juggernaut takedown. But that all like that transitions into the final
just
bit
shredded
here.
Shredded his Achilles.
And the glasses that you talked about.
Yes. Which I loved. I just watched Logan not too long ago, obviously.
But we've talked a lot about.
Oh, I loved the glasses as a shout out.
Oh, it's like, and makes me think even more that she like is that character. But
we talked about how we wouldn't ruin Logan and what could we do to keep it, whatever he says. Well, we didn't. We're not going to. The whole, by the way, you brought this up earlier, but like, I would say the beginning of the movie was as strong as it could possibly be.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I was in stitches. And then the action sequence during the credits, I'd really say, I mean, the whole movie was fantastic. But the first 45 minutes were spectacular for me.
Yeah. No, I think I agree. And I what I realized as we got to the end, a couple things, I guess. Ever since this was announced, it was clear that he was wearing the yellow suit. I was waiting to see an actual photo of Hugh Jackman with the headpiece. And there were some like false starts where like some things came out on the internet and they weren't real. And then I kept seeing so many shots and stills. I was like, are they just not going to do it? Like, are they just going to put him in the yellow suit, not have any mask on? Because that's still a step up from like nothing. But when it finally happened in that New York battle with all the Deadpools, that and then the immediate just like them going through all these people and just like Wolverine
so
going like we've never gotten an R-rated Wolverine that's like full on doing the Wolverine thing, like
with the cowl, the head.
Yeah. Oh man, it was just
I loved it
so much.
But if you just find this podcast, Robbie loves a few things, but very few things does he love more than comic accurate costumes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's the thing is, it's one of the things that I love so much about the way Reynolds approaches Deadpool. And like you, when he takes the mask off, it's always very intentional.
Yeah.
And there's like, it's like a kind of quieter moment, but I love that they just lean into like, he's wearing the costume the whole time, because I do think that that's part of the fun, is that it's like they're embodying the persona. And when you break that down too much, then you kind of, you start having to play that game of making the superhero feel less and less like a superhero.
Your tailor's a predator, by the way. That was one of my favorite lines. For sure.
No, I thought, man, that was so fun. That whole fight scene was so fun. But the thing that I took away as I was watching that, like from the whole movie, when we had, I think it was when we had Dan Gavazdin on the podcast to talk about Spider-Man movies leading into No Way Home, he made a comment that I have thought about almost every time I've watched a superhero movie since, where he talked about like the choice of setting and set pieces and how some movies like phone that in and others like really make a point to like change up the backgrounds that people are fighting in, and like really not just the choreography of the fight, but the way that the like momentum of the fight moves across a certain set. And we've talked about movies where it feels really nice because you can tell something's been built out and they're like, you know, building the whole like slanted floor of Tony's house and Iron Man 3 and stuff. that's something also that we've talked about Brian Singer and Sam Raimi both being really good at when you talk about Raimi directing these fight scenes across the train and through the city. And I just got like this final battle in New York, like on the street, was so fun. Just like that being the background. Like I love that they're fighting through like a bus and you're like, it feels again, like you're in where like Marvel stories should take place, like in New York on the street level. Like I like that. It's like, I loved it in Endgame, right? Like when they kind of have the gray, like desolation behind them. But I do think sometimes superhero movies lean too much into like there's just a kind of color behind them and it can make it all feel really green screeny. So like I just was thinking here, we start off in that forest scene that we talked about with the opening credits. We get to like the void deserty stuff, but then there are also like other parts of the void that all look different.
A little forestry.
Yeah, and then you get, like, even, like, the Ant-Man skull is a really fun set piece within that. The TVA is always really fun.
Yeah, I got to see a new room in the TVA, which I was like.
And then even, like, the very final thing where they're, like, going down underneath, like, the subway. It's just, I feel like there was a lot of thought put into each moment in this movie and where it happened. Like, the diner scene where they're sitting there and he's, like, drinking the rubbing alcohol.
Like, yeah,
it's like, it seems to me that is a mark of like creativity and care for each scene. Like, it's not just like, okay, insert, you know, fun fight scene. It's like, let's do a full fight scene inside of a Honda Odyssey.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I really like that. And those things throughout this movie, I think, are what like take it up to a top tier thing for me. Like, it's not just that everything was done so well. It's that they were ambitious in those, like in the moment to moment, without being overly ambitious in what the movie was trying to accomplish. Like, it wasn't just that they were like, this is a bridge to get to like, to get people back on board and then we'll start pumping out more stuff. Like, it was in the details where you see like Reynolds and Jackman and obviously like a slew of other creators, like really digging in.
Totally agree. As one final side note to that, I do love that we are so many projects deep into this thing that it is forcing these creators to come up with unique action things. I personally think that we've had a good run of a lot of them. Like, if you think back, like, I think the fight on Aladdin in the Marvels is cool.
Yeah.
I even thought like the setting, you may not like all the CGI, but the setting of the Quantumania final battle is memorable to me. Like Kang coming down on those things and how you like the bridges are repelling.
And the Kang like ship is really cool. Like that design is fun.
Yeah. So, and then obviously going back even further, the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 famous like tunnel fight sequence, which is one of the best they've ever done. I feel like we're on a good run, partially because of what you said, the generic fighting in front of a cityscape,
right?
You know, they're having to get more creative with it.
And I do also, our manager Pete texted us the other day asking what city Deadpool took place in, and I realized I didn't know, but I guess New York.
They don't really ever say any, hold on, I've only seen it twice. They don't ever really say any markers in my...
Well, I guess it would have to. That makes sense, though, because Westchester is where the X-Mansion is, and that's in, like, upstate New York.
Yeah, they're close enough, I guess.
Yeah.
Could be Buffalo.
All right. That is the only thing I was going to say qualitatively to kind of end it that I wasn't thinking when we started it, but as we're rounding it out, you just teed it up perfectly. I think this movie is, I think this is like Guardians Volume 3 for Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yeah, in so many ways. That's also kind of where I'm thinking it would sit in like a ranking for me.
Yeah, like it's just done so well. It's like a lot of great practical effects, like very few like outright misses.
100%.
If any, you know, it's like, it's just, it's, it stands out as like a movie that like you could show anyone and just say like, look, this is,
I think if you were making categories to all this, I think if you were making categories to all this, I would say Guardians has a little more heart, and maybe because I'm more invested in them, a few other plot things that are maybe a little more interesting. But this movie was definitely funnier. If I was stacking them up.
No. But I think I thought about that too, just because like there are a lot of, you know, the first Deadpool came out.
It's also the third one.
Yeah. I mean, the first Deadpool came out after Guardians, and you can, like, it's hard for me to imagine that movie existing in the way that it did without Guardians, because it's like so, it relies so much on like a pop soundtrack. There's like,
yeah, good call.
You know,
the music
like,
too.
A willingness to be out, like to make it an outright comedy, which I don't think we had gotten before Guardians.
Outlandish moments, goofy looking things.
Right.
Like almost grotesque looking things.
Like absurd humor.
Absurd humor is a perfect.
Yeah, I think.
But I think that's exactly where my gut, after one viewing, who knows? We got to watch a lot more times. And who knows in the future if that would change based off what movie comes out next or whatever. But that's about where I'd see it, like the bottom of tier one for me. And the only reason it wouldn't break into that top like eight is just because of the longstanding implications those top eight have typically. Yeah. Like a civil, like this isn't going to beat a Civil War because it doesn't have all the Avengers and all the lasting 10-year conflict buildup, that kind of thing. But
I know.
Yeah, I'm, as good as like a standalone film as a lot of those in that area.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think at this moment, I need to think about rankings in general. But
yeah, you
I
don't
think,
have to do it.
No. But I like ballparking it. This is easier for me than it normally is. I think mine is, it would be under Civil War probably, but above like Homecoming. Again, and it's just so hard for me because the Avengers, all the Avengers movies, I just love. And I count Civil War as kind of one of the better Avengers movies. But I think like beyond that, I would maybe even put it above Guardians 1 preference wise.
Oh, because
it's just more my scene.
No way.
But
better than Guardians 3, I think.
Yeah, I think that's right. Certainly better than Guardians 2. I don't think anyone's debating that. But I just think Guardians...
Lance
like,
is, but yes.
I mean, I like Guardians 2 more than a lot of people, but my point is, preference-wise, like, and I think that this is going to be important for people, like, if you... This is going to be the interesting thing, I guess. If you love and were kind of raised on a certain era of comic book movies...
Oh, for sure.
This is going to, like...
For sure. And I wasn't. So that's all it really is. Again, I loved it. So.
No, totally. But I mean, I think that that's the
right,
like...
If you're going to come down to preferences, like Guardians 1 was imprinted in my brain at an imprintable stage, and that will never be reversed because of that. Like that moment is so forever cemented in me. Same with Civil War.
Yeah.
So like it's going to take... I don't know if it's possible. I don't know if it's possible for those to be topped just because...
Yeah.
But to your point... There are some Deadpool fans that this might be that for them.
And just
or
X-Men
Logan
fans.
Yeah, or whatever. And so, yeah, this might be the conclusion of that. And maybe they weren't as invested in the Guardians or whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, for sure.
I think
I would think if you're a Deadpool fan, you're pretty stoked today. Like I would think you were, if you were a Deadpool fan, this is not us, but if you were a Deadpool fan who was worried that Disney was going to wussify the movie. That absolutely didn't happen.
No.
Absolutely not even close.
I mean, the like Chris Evans losing all of his skin.
Yeah, right.
Like, was pretty brutal.
And if you were, just in general, I think if you were concerned that your favorite thing is now joining something you don't like, if it's the MCU.
Yeah.
I don't think that was the case, really.
No.
In fact, I think to my original point, and then we can let this go, is I think the only people that would maybe have any hesitation are if you're my type, which is you didn't grow up with Deadpool, you didn't really grow up with the X-Men comics or Logan, and so you were kind of hoping for the MCU connectivity on a much higher level. On our Instagram Live on the way into the theater, I said, that's the thing I'm most excited for. Not how is it as a Deadpool conclusion to the trilogy.
Right.
It's the connectivity. And so I think that's why I raised those questions. Again, I think it's a fantastic film that didn't connect as much as I maybe anticipated.
Yeah.
But was a great closure to a lot of the Fox Universe stuff. And
that Deadpool. Trilogy.
And the trilogy. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
It is like, I think that's one thing that I always like, I really, especially a movie like this, I think it's hard to close out a trilogy when the movie is also doing other things. So like one of the weird things, it's like with Civil War, like I'm always trying to figure out, is that a good ending to the Captain America trilogy?
No.
You know, it's like,
no. But I love it because it's an Avengers film.
Oh, no, totally. But I do respect that this one, like...
For sure.
It feels like it works on kind of every level except as, like, a big needle mover for, like, the multiverse story in the MCU.
For sure.
But maybe that's good because they're basically... Man, maybe that's where I'll leave it. Maybe that's what that comment meant that we were talking about earlier about the, like, can we just drop the multiverse thing? Maybe it's instead of dropping it, it's kind of Marvel saying, like, if you haven't liked the things that came out over the last couple of years, like, that's fine. Like, here's your new entry point and, like, move with us now. And if that's what it was doing, like, it's tying up things that needed tying up. And then now it's saying, like, okay, like, clean slate, like, trust us. I think I like that. Like, I think that's better than overreaching, I would say.
For sure. Get real close to the camera here. We want to know what you guys think. We really do. Did you have as much fun as we did? Golly, I wish you could have seen Robbie and I in the theater.
That was a fun theater watch.
That was a fun... Oh, I'm so glad we got to do it together. And that would be up there with a couple of our favorites.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of good ones. What did you think? Hit us up. We have so many ways you can get involved. You can check out Friends From Work Plus. It's some bonus content and just a great way to financially support this podcast. Check out our sponsors. That helps this podcast as well. But if nothing else, listening is so good, and we are so grateful for you. Please rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast. You can check us out on YouTube, check us out on Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your pods. And then I'll just say, depending on when you're listening to this, next week's episode, we hope to break down some of the craziness that I'm sure is going to come out of Marvel being back at San Diego Comic-Con Hall H for the first time in a few years and with a very anticipated slot. And I think they will be unveiling a large slate of things, one of which I think they'll unveil Spider-Man 4. And that's just a hot take prediction from me that I think is going to happen. And I'm so stoked about that. So we're going to be talking about all of that next week and more. Thank you for listening. We love you. We have a Discord channel. You can hop on and chat with a bunch of other people.
This is a great time to do that. It is free.
Free.
So if you just want to talk to people that really enjoy this stuff, it's not weird and it's a way of talking that is not toxic.
Yep.
Like that can be in other social media environments.
Yep.
So
the FFWpodcast.com and there's a link to our Discord channel on there. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting. We love you guys so much. We'll see you right back here next time on Friends From Work.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.